First thesis, postmodernism is the end result of Kantian epistemology. After this whirlwind tour of 220 years of philosophy, I can now summarize and offer my first hypothesis about the origins of postmodernism. Postmodernism is the first ruthlessly consistent statement of the consequences of rejecting reason, those consequences being necessary given the history of epistemology since Kant. The key ingredients of postmodernism were laid out by the philosophers of the first half of the 20th century. The developments in continental philosophy up to Heidegger provided the positive direction and impetus that postmodernism takes. And the negative developments in Anglo-American philosophy up to the collapse of logical positivism left the defenders of reason and science feeling dispirited, directionless, and unable to mount any significant response to the skeptical and relativistic arguments the postmodernists used. Yet much of 20th century philosophy had been piecemeal and unsystematic, especially in the Anglo-American tradition. Postmodernism is the first synthesis of the implications of the major trends. In postmodernism, we find metaphysical anti-realism, epistemological subjectivity, the placing of feeling at the root of all value issues, and the consequent relativism of both knowledge and values, and the consequent devaluing or disvaluing of the scientific enterprise. Metaphysics and epistemology are at the heart of this account of postmodernism. Despite the postmodernists' billing of themselves as anti-metaphysics and anti-epistemology, their writings focus upon those themes almost exclusively. Heidegger attacks logic and reason to make room for emotion. Foucault reduces knowledge to an expression of social power. Derrida deconstructs language and turns it into a vehicle of aesthetic play. And Rorty chronicles the failures of the realist and objectivist tradition in almost exclusively metaphysical and epistemological terms. From the postmodern anti-realist metaphysics and anti-reason epistemology, the postmodern social consequences follow almost directly. Once we set aside reality and reason, what are we left with to go on? We can, as the conservatives would prefer, simply turn to our group's traditions and follow them. Or we can, as the postmodernists will prefer, turn to our feelings and follow them. If we then ask what our core feelings are, we connect with the answers from the past century's dominant theories of human nature. From Kierkegaard and Heidegger, we learn that our emotional core is a deep sense of dread and guilt. From Marx, we feel a deep sense of alienation, victimization, and rage. From Nietzsche, we discover a deep need for power. From Freud, we uncover the urges of dark and aggressive sexuality. Rage, power, guilt, lust, and dread constitute the center of the postmodern emotional universe. Postmodernists split over whether those core feelings are determined biologically or socially, with the social version running as the strong favorite. In either case, however, individuals are not in control of their feelings. Their identities are a product of their group memberships, whether economic, sexual, or racial. Since the shaping economic, sexual, or racial experiences or developments vary from group to group, differing groups have no common experiential framework. With no objective standard by which to mediate their different perspectives and feelings, and with no appeal to reason possible, group balkanization and conflict must necessarily result. Nasty political correctness as a tactic then makes perfect sense. Having rejected reason, we will not expect ourselves or others to behave reasonably. Having put our passions to the fore, we will act and react more crudely and range of the moment. Having lost our sense of ourselves as individuals, we will seek our identities in our groups. Having little in common with different groups, we will see them as competitive enemies. Having abandoned recourse to rational and neutral standards, violent competition will seem practical. And having abandoned peaceful conflict resolution, prudence will dictate that only the most ruthless will survive. Postmodernist reactions to the prospects of a brutal postmodern social world then fall into three main categories, depending on whether Foucault's, Derrida's, or Rorty's variant is given primacy. Foucault, following Nietzsche more closely in having reduced knowledge to an expression of social power, urges us to play the brutal power politics game. Though contrary to Nietzsche, he urges that we play it on behalf of the traditionally disempowered. Derrida, having followed Heidegger more closely and purified him, deconstructs language and retreats into it as a vehicle of aesthetic play, insulating himself from the fray. Rorty, having abandoned objectivity, hopes that we will seek, quote, intersubjective agreement, unquote, among the, quote, members of our own tribe, unquote, and feeling loyal to his American left liberal roots, requests that we be nice to each other while doing so. The postmodern options, in short, are to plunge into the fray, or withdraw and insulate oneself from it, or try to ameliorate its excesses. Postmodernism is thus the end result of the counter-enlightenment inaugurated by Kantian epistemology. End of chapter 3.